hot San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast, episode 94. In a room filled with returning planeswalkers, we've got Evan Wardell.
It's so hot.
We've got Larry Chatfield.
So very hot.
And we've got myself, Cole Ferriol. Too hot. Hot damn.
It's a scorcher.
Put the fire on. Too hot. Hot damn.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, you just
say my name.
You got mean mugged from behind.
Oh, our producer Lucy is giving me the death stare. Don't you dare speak Bruno Mars in this house.
So we had some friends in town over the weekend,
right.
And me and Lucy and our friends walked up to Japantown for the Cherry Blossom Festival,
mm-hmm.
And we were walking for a while, just like at the same speed as one of the floats. And that float was just playing Uptown Funk and repeat, and like had a line of people dancing behind it. That's funny.
Uptown Funk all through Japan.
Loop.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a good song. It's a little overplayed now.
And then like between loops of it, like someone would come on the speaker and go like, "Hello, we are so and so from the community organization, spreading peace and love. Happy springtime," and then they played again.
Oh yeah,
it was really funny.
It's gorgeous out in San Francisco. We've had a nice little hot streak, and it's just spring is here.
It was 40 degrees in Albuquerque.
Oh boy, what?
It's brutal.
Oh no,
so bad.
No, yeah, Larry, you just got back from your sojourn. We haven't had you on the podcast for a couple weeks. We've been doing some fill-ins, and it's nice to have you back. How was your trip?
It was awesome.
Yeah? So just let's take us through. So you went north to Pacific Northwest.
Seattle, yep.
Team Nomad.
And so went up there for the pre-release.
Gotcha.
And then did a PPTQ the weekend after that.
Nice.
Where Bruce and I both made top eight, which
Woo!
Was fun. And we both proceeded to lose.
Oh.
Yeah.
Too
funny, I was just telling you about guys, that's how I lost in that thing too. The guy played a turn for, what the hell is that? What's the madness equipment?
The madness equipment? The one that you discard a card to equip it?
Yeah, the murderer's axe.
Murderer's axe.
Oh yeah.
So murderer's axe, he played that on turn four and then played turn five, played Evison's Missionaries.
Oh, baby.
So exile your guy, get a 7-7. And I'm like, okay, so he kills me that game. And then the second game, he plays like Neglected Heirloom on turn one and does the same thing on turn four. So then he has a 7-7 first strike. And it's like playing like green, red. I'm like, oh, God.
I
don't really have a way to kill this.
Right.
Man, I had Neglected Heirloom in my pre-release deck. That card, ugh, when you can put that on anything. If that thing flips, it's
brutal.
It's game over. Yeah. It's like so hard to deal with.
Right.
And the thing that's really terrible about the Avacyn's Missionaries plus the Neglected Heirloom is they're both of those cards are non-reflip cards.
Right.
Yeah.
Once they flip.
So they don't like, you know, they just stay there and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Right.
Like sometimes
right.
You can do cute things to like get things to transform back and you can maybe, you're done.
Can't play around those things.
Yeah, so we did that, and then Bruce and I flew to Albuquerque, and then the next day the rest of Team Nomad came down. So we
rolled deep.
Yep. It was really great. So there's like seven of us? Yeah, seven of us, and all but one made day two, which was great.
Wow, awesome. Yeah. Great.
That's and awesome. I had the worst deck of all time.
Really?
Seriously. Like I.
So you were the one who didn't make day two?
No.
What?
I was. I randomly was one of those people.
Oh, like, wow.
Totally did not expect it. I had, first of all, I only had two rares in my deck.
Okay.
And one of them was Deathcap Cultivator, which is just kind of, it's just really not that.
It's a rare uncommon.
Yes, exactly. And then the other card, which is situationally amazing, which is the Soul Swallower.
Oh, right. The was it the 5-mana?
So it's
four mana for 5/5 or something?
No, so it's green 2 for a 3/3 trample.
Oh, right.
And then if you have Delirium during your upkeep, it gets 3+1+1 counters. So it was really hard for me.
I can see that getting out of hand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like so those were the only cards I had that were like rare.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of my deck was just like, some werewolves and some removal, but it just, didn't have a really great curve. Didn't have tons of removal.
What colors were you?
Just red, green.
Oh, okay. Red, green. All right.
Yeah.
So we weren't really doing the Delirium black, green thing.
No. It's like, The only way I could get delirium was like if I got my one warped landscape. though the one funny thing I did get is I actually had delirium on turn four when I actually got delirium with three quarters of delirium with one card. So I actually cast a lava axe.
Yep.
To kill something big and discard my Wicker Witch.
Gotcha.
Oh, nice.
So it's an artifact, right?
And creature. And the instant, right. And I already had a sorcery. I had Fork in the Road in the site in there.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So and that was like his turn four, and I had his turn five, and I just previously cast the Soul Swallower, and then he just started going crazy.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that thing seems to be can get out of hand.
Yeah, yeah. Like if it gets to like the first activation, like pretty much can't kill it unless they've got like like declaration or murderous compulsion or something like that, right?
Yeah, like a 6/6 is hard enough to deal with. Once it turns into a 9/9, like what are you gonna do?
Yeah. So I actually had a game where I had that double strike card, the Uncaged Fury, red and two,
gives it
+1/+1 and double strike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They may have gone on my 12/12 trampler a couple of times.
Jesus.
12/12 trample. Yikes. Double strike.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
So you had those two cards, and then what? You just ran hot on day one?
Yeah, I honestly the way I won a bunch of things was I just played the most aggressive deck I could do, and people got mana screwed a couple times. Mm-hmm. Like I had the one guy who had the Wrath and Avacyn.
Wow.
And I mean, I just all my stuff is a bunch of dudes, right?
Right.
So I just died to that. So he cast that, but he didn't have delirium, so he didn't get anything.
Yeah.
And then he didn't really draw anything, and I drew a couple guys, and I just
finished
killed
him off.
And nice. Then like second game, he cast Avacyn and blocked all my stuff. And, I was like, in response to that, I'll lava axe it. And so like, that's literally the five power burn spell for five.
Oh, right. Right.
Those are like literally the only two things that I could do to like, kill it, maybe like rabid bite. Yeah, if I had a rabid bite for like I had something that was a four power, which wasn't very many things.
Yeah.
So I just got really lucky to have that, and then like game. Oh, you know how I won? Actually, this is how I won a bunch of games. Mm-hmm. So I had the pacifist, the Lambhole pacifist, which is the uncommon green card, 3/3, and if he flips, he becomes a generic 4/4 if they don't cast a spell.
Right.
Oh, the two mana guy.
Yeah. So
that
I had
card,
so broken.
So good.
Right.
You go first. Like, so frequently, somebody will not do something on turn two, right?
You just hit them for four on turn three.
Yeah.
You didn't even try.
And it's their turn two. Like, if you go first, so the way I beat this one guy, and honestly, this happened more times than I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just how I went. I would go, like, turn two, play that guy. They do nothing. He flips. Then turn three, I go, I'll play my 3/3 wolf for three.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play my Voldaren Duelist for the 3/2 haste that they can't block.
Right.
I did that like multiple times.
Just, like swing for.
Well, you're just done, right? Yeah, I mean, they're done. Like, yeah. I mean, even without the Duelist, it's like you play the 4/4 guy, 3/3, and he becomes 4/4, and then now I've got 7 power on the board, and he's got nothing.
Right.
What are you going to do, right? It's just like.
Right.
And then
right.
I had the two loggers, the Hinterland logger. It's a 2/2 becomes the 4. So I had two of those and
2/1.
The green. So they become a 4/2 trample.
Right.
And, they block, and you do use a little trick of +1/+1.
Right.
And they think they're trading, and instead they take, like, three, and you keep your guy in a clue.
Oh, God, it reminds me of those stupid bears from, yeah. What's it called?
Oh, yeah.
The Savage Punch and Cons.
Yes,
and
yes.
Just like, yeah. Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, you had these high-powered. So we've touched upon this on our last episode with Zach, was that green has these kind of high-powered two-drops that... and if you go first, you lay one of these things out, and then it flips, and then all of a sudden they're staring down a 4/2 or 4/4. Like,
exactly.
And it's just it's not a magic that we're used to.
Yeah. Well,
it definitely feels almost like a Planeswalker, where it's like, this card, this 2-drop, will just win the game on its own. You
right.
just play it. You really got to be prepared. You got to be able to play something on turn two, or you'll just lose some amount of games to a guy who, like... And there's, like, a lot of werewolves, a lot of 2-mana werewolves that just, like...
Right.
Like the other one I had that was I didn't actually see him most of the day, which was kind of sucky, but when he did it, which is that like Forge Master or something like that, the 2/1 that pokes something when they blocks or gets blocked by.
Yeah.
And then he flips.
He's super annoying.
he flips and becomes a 3-2, and then he does a double poke.
Yeah, he does two damage.
You're like, how do you block that thing, right? And he's a red 2-drop werewolf that's kind of annoying. Like, he becomes that, and you're like, what do you do, right?
Right.
And then I also had the village messenger, which is the one haste, the red, and he's 1-1 haste.
Yep.
And then he flips and becomes a 2-2 menace.
Right.
So that was basically what my deck just tried to do, is just play all these, like, kind of
really low
stupid
curve.
Low curve, like, really aggressive in the beginning and then hard to block.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Right.
But it only worked to 6-3, right? I mean, it's, you know, you just
get
wrecked.
But it's
sometimes
interesting, because this is something that Zach also pointed out in our last podcast, was that the sealed format can actually, this sealed format feels rather fast. Like, it can be kind of quick because of these low-powered creatures.
I feel like more than just fast, I think the right word is it feels very tempo-based.
Right, okay. That's a good distinction.
Because, like, for instance, I can't tell you how many times I attack with my 4-2 guy that flipped, and they're like, oh, I'll trade with you, right? And like I said, you do the +1/+1, now it's a 5-3, and they thought they were trading, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not only do you, like, trample for 3, but you get a clue, and your guy stays on the board, and they have to deal with him again. Or, like, I had aim.
Just, like, so blown out.
It's a total blowout. And then
Clue is such a blow. It's, like, such a cherry on top.
It
it's
is.
It's like, ooh, then I'll draw a card next turn.
Yeah, so, and then I also had aim high, which is, like, the +2/+2 guy. And I did that a couple times. Like, you know, I'll keep my guy alive, and, like, you have to deal with it again. You know, it's really, really, really great. Like, it just feels like the tricks are very, very powerful. One that I love a lot more, and I actually haven't really played it very much, is the white one, the +2/+2. And if it's do it on a human or something like that, you get a, or if you have equipment, I forget which one.
Yeah, if you control an equipment, you get a 1/1 human. Like, yeah, I had that guy. I was that. I guess it's not a guy. That spell.
The spell that makes a guy.
Yeah, and it's just really great, it's because good. Not only, like, so in that scenario, there were many times when, so they block, and like I said, you blow them out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it only costs you 1 mana, so now you still have 2 mana, and you play another guy.
Right.
So now you still have your 4-2 and, say, you know, another 2-2, right? Really, really powerful.
Well, you have to be careful about then flipping, though, your...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you can flip it back. It doesn't matter, right?
And then it just flips over and whatever.
Yeah.
You just...
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, I don't think the format is, like, fundamentally aggressive. I think there's enough werewolves that every deck will have some amount, because they're, like, all, you know, decent, and some amount of the time someone will just play one, flip it, and run away with the game. And in a format like sealed, where you just don't always have that many 2-drops, you know, normally someone plays a 2-drop, you can kind of ignore it for a while until you get down a slightly bigger creature. In this format, if you ignore it for a little while, it turns into a bigger creature that now you have to come up with an even bigger creature to deal with it. And if they have, like, one combat trick, then all of a sudden you're in, you know, you're under a huge amount of pressure, and you've got a very limited time to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's kind of swingy, because, like, if the game doesn't go like that, then they will grind out. Like, so I kept a hand. Oh, I took a picture and I posted it on our Facebook page. I don't know if you guys saw this.
But you can see it at home if you like our Facebook page.
Oh, yeah. Go to our Facebook page, wizardsofthecast@gmail.com.
No, that's not our Facebook page.
How do you? Sorry, I can't operate a smartphone and say words that make sense.
Come on, Evan, you're a millennial. You should be able to do this.
Facebook.com/wizardsofthecast. Let me find this. Oh, here we go. No, come on, man. I really hate the. Okay, so the hand was a Toppelgeist, a Thraben Inspector, a Strength of Arms, which is that one mana combat trick. A Moorland Drifter, which is it's like a bear.
It's a bear
spirit
that becomes flying.
Yeah, it gets flying if you have delirium. Then two,
which is I love how, like you were saying, like you have to have all these 2-drops. I love these 2-drops that do something later on, which is great.
Oh yeah, and then I had 2 Truth Faith Sensors and a Plains. And so it was a 7, like, one land hand, but I had 3 2 1-drops and a 1 mana.
Right.
Combat trick, and then both my True Faith Sensors, which were, like, just totally insane for me. And the Thraben Inspector, so if I drew one more land, then I could...
Anything, yeah.
You know,
any land, yeah.
If I drew one land, I could play my whole hand, and then also have get a clue and be able to start drawing out of it. That game went super long and got really grindy.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
He kept a 2-lander, and then it was really interesting. I kind of, like, drew out of the mana screw first. We actually, like, both had kind of aggressive, like, white-greenish decks.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though I got to go, like, one drop... you know, then I finally drew land and played the equipment. We just kind of like traded a little bit, and then we just sat and looked at each other because we both had like these big boards with a 1 and 2 mana piece. And then I like drew out of the mana screw first, and eventually he won because he just had bigger creatures than me. But it was really interesting to see, like, yes, I lost this game where I kept one land, but not because of
what you thought.
Yeah,
that's amazing that one lander is actually something.
So I think the key is you just need to have two drops, and you need to be able to deal with,
right.
Like, it's really risky keeping a hand, even on the play against an unknown opponent. Well, on the play against an unknown opponent, a hand that starts at a 3-mana creature is okay.
Yeah.
On the draw, you definitely don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, like, and it's interesting how much the sort of, like, play-draw dichotomy is affected by these flip creatures, because, like, on the draw, that creature's going to flip, and your like, 3-mana 2-3 isn't going to be able to deal with it, but on the play, your 3-mana 2-3 is going to outclass their 2-mana, you know, 2-1 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But,
and speaking of which, I lost all 7 of my die rolls day one.
Congratulations.
Wow.
It was terrible. Day 2, I lost all 6.
Jeez.
I didn't lose the last one because I got a bye, but
right.
It was just kind of insane because I kept thinking the whole day, like, fuck, if I go first, this hand is so much better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's amazing that you were able to still pull it out going second.
So speaking of swingy games, I'll just build this board state up for you. So I go first, and I have the Skinvasion, the one you like, the Skinvasion. Mm-hmm. That card is really bonkers good, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. It's the red enchantment for one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then turn 2, I play the Ember Eye Wolf, which is the 1/2 haste that you can fire breathe for.
Right.
So I attack with that, and then he plays a 2/2. So I untap, and I'm like,
two.
I put Skinvasion on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Skinvasion.
And he has to attack me, right?
You've got your wolf out.
Yeah, and I got my wolf out. So I leave my wolf back, and he's like, so he's looking at it, and I've got a green and a red up. So he's like, oh, well, he's just going to trade and get my 3/4 guy, right? So he attacks, and I'm like, I'll cast Confront on that. So now my guy becomes a 2/3. I get a clue.
Right.
My guy lives. I kill his guy, and I get a 3/4. So you went from this board state, which is just kind of really, like, you know, just kind of at parity. And
like, this is like, what, on turn 4 or
this
something?
This is turn 3.
Right.
So what I have left now is I have a fire-breathing guy, right? I have got a 3/4 and a clue.
Right.
And because of the clue, you're actually up a card because you essentially traded your combat trick for their creature, but now you're up a card because you get a clue out of it. for the low, low price of...
Green.
1 mana.
Yes. Jeez. And it's funny is that's all I had in lands, too. I had, like, 1 forest and 2 mountains. And then, like, so now I'm like, oh, I'll just sack this. And, oh, look, I drew a land. Now I'll attack and pump. Yeah. It's just all so good.
I mean, it's not like he had a choice, but...
No, but, yeah, but it was great. Like, you know...
It's good knowing you can do that.
Yeah.
But that creates a very swingy kind of, you know, board state, totally. It's funny, yeah. It can just kind of get out of hand really quickly.
Yeah, so I think the... As far as the speed of the format goes, like the real takeaway is, like, you know, make sure you can handle those early turns,
right?
But then also be prepared to, like, grind out a game if you have to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you played some, like, how do the grindy games typically? I mean, are they resolved based on timely removal or just the bombs come out and take over the game? Or are there some, like, crack through? Like, I noticed there are some like, what is it? What's that red card? Like, all creatures can't block except for flying creatures or something?
Yeah, I think...
Are there some...
I think that Magmatic Chasm is definitely a one of.
Yeah.
Main deck. I think there are a bunch of, like, if you have that card in your deck, I think there's a bunch of times where it actually will win you, you know, X number of games.
Right.
Does that, like... deal damage or is
nope.
it just
no,
red
just,
one yeah. sorcery all non-flying creatures
falter
can't block.
That's why flyers are so good.
Right.
The green blue decks that I played were really great because you would either beat them down early with green creatures
mm-hmm.
or you'd stall out and you'd draw your flyers and beat them down in the air while all your dummies stared at each other.
right interesting.
Yeah, that's my either green white or green blue is my favorite archetype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've done a... How did your drafts go on day 2?
So, day 2, the first draft, my pack 1, pick 1 was the Uldred, or Uldred Kindred? Kinnin? Whatever. It's the red, the indestructible werewolf.
Something German.
Yeah.
Uven Varden.
So he's like red in, he's red in three, or I think he's red in three or red in two for a 2/2, and then you can spend green. I think he's red in two. You get, he's a 2/2, and then you can spend green in three and make an attacking wolf or werewolf indestructible until end of turn.
Oh, right. Oh. Ulrich's Kindred.
Ulrich's Kindred,
and
yeah.
It's got trample.
Man, all and those, that whole cycle.
Is that whole cycle dope or what?
Yes. Yeah.
Ugh. Every single one is like just so annoying in its own way. And it's funny because they all match up in interesting ways against each other.
Isn't the blue one the Spectral Shepherd? Isn't that the one that bounces spirits?
It's white,
yeah.
But it
yeah, it's white and
blue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you know that was
that
my
one's
pack,
super annoying.
That was my pack one, pick one. And then after the first full pack, I was mono red. I never got a card other than like, you know, a red card that, or just like, you know, hate drafting something. But I really wasn't anywhere. I had picked up like a Nahiri's Machinations because I thought maybe I might go red white. Mm-hmm. And then pack two, my first pick was the Silver Fur Partisan, which is the 2/2 trample wolf that for green and two that all your wolves have when they're targeted by anything. You get a 2/2 wolf or
nice.
A werewolf.
Oh, right. It's not just him, too. It's all other wolves
all
and werewolves.
All your wolves are werewolves. So they have to deal with him first off, right?
Right.
Jeez.
And then, like, fourth or fifth pick, I got a second one.
Ooh.
Wow.
And then I picked up, like...
Man, when green's open,
yeah,
this feels good.
Yeah. So then I picked up, like... And then that pack, which is strange. So my whole first pick was mostly all red. And then that one was mostly green. Like, I got two loggers, and I got the two silver furs, and a bunch of confronts. So anyhow, my deck ended up being crazy good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it was
green,
like
red, just
green red, super aggressive. Had three confront the unknowns, mm-hmm, and Uvenwald Mysteries, which is just, if anyone hasn't played with that card,
right,
it's broken on levels. It's just crazy. It's like get a clue when something dies, and when you sack a clue, you get a dude, and
just like, becomes a whole engine onto
it's
itself.
An engine all onto itself.
Jesus.
So the couple of positive things from the thing. So I went 3-0 with that one.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy who basically was on turn four of turns,
mm-hmm,
and then he had to kill me because he wasn't going to win. He didn't have a win, and then he thinks he can't. I can't win, so he attacks me with everything, and I like, and he's got like a 15/15 soul swallower.
Jesus.
So I'm like block, 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 block everything, and I'm like go down to three. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, so I sack with all, I get all the tokens from right, my, or all the clues from my,
all the clues
from my Uvenwald Mysteries. And he's got like two dudes back. He casts like two dudes. And then I'm like, end of turn, sack, 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 sack. And I get a bunch of 1/1s. I untap and I swing and kill him.
Oh, that's awesome.
So best part about that story is I beat him game one. How did, yeah, I beat him?
How?
With a stick.
He decked him.
Oh, nice.
So my super green red deck, I decked him.
Grinded out?
He had magnifying glass, which,
okay,
is the clue maker.
Right.
For four mana, you can investigate. So he had that going.
Just like ideas.
And then I had the Uvenwald Mysteries going.
Right.
So we're both drawing cards, trying to like stay at parity. And he got down to like one card, and I had like five.
Right.
And he had Wrath,
right,
but didn't get Delirium with it. He was the one with the angel.
Oh, okay. This is
So that was really great, and like, so I was able to like kill him game one with that, and then he beats me game two, and then game three. That's how I beat him. That was pretty fun.
Wow, that's great. It's
crazy, yeah, games.
Yeah.
So funny story. The only times I've played with the cards Uvenwald Mysteries and Murder Investigation, and I also had Tireless Tracker in this deck.
No, Ongoing Investigation. The blue one?
Ongoing Investigation?
Yes, Ongoing Investigation.
It's not Murder Investigation?
No, no. It's
the blue one, whenever a creature you control.
Blue and two, yeah.
Okay.
It's Ongoing Investigation.
Blue and one.
Was it blue and one? Even,
yeah,
better.
The only time I played with these cards are all in the same deck, so I get them all confused, because I remember I would frequently have all three of them out at once. So I think of one of the cards, I'm like, So I like play land and I get a clue in a 1/1. Right. Is that how that? No. That's because I had the tireless track. So this is the card that. Oh, that's the one when you do damage, you get a clue.
Right. Yeah.
Do you get a 1/1 too? No, that's the.
Is this the double
mysteries.
Investigate?
I investigate twice, right? Oh no, that's because the Erdwall.
Is this
the
one where you're keeping track of your clues with your 20-sided die?
I'm sure that sealed deck is like the most insane deck I will ever get in this format.
That's crazy. Yeah. So, okay. So then, and then in your second draft, you,
so my second draft was, it was okay. I went 1/1/1.
Okay. Yeah.
And that deck, I started out with the, I forget the name of what it is, but it's the Sage of the something.
What's it do?
It's the green.
Oh, the star star.
Yeah. The star star.
I didn't like that guy.
Card's equal to your hand, right?
Yeah. So he's green and four. And his power and toughness are equal to the number of cards, and when he comes into play, you draw a card.
Yeah.
And then if he flips, his power and toughness is equal to the cards in everybody's hand. And I had two of them.
Yeah. So, oh, really?
So my pack one, pick one was that guy. And then my pack three, pick one was the foil one of that.
Jeez.
And then he's got Vigilance and Trample. Was it good?
Oh, my God.
Was it good?
Yes.
Yeah? Really? Evan complained about it. He was like, really it was like a 1/1 most of the time.
Yeah, I've... Like, and if games would go long, then it wasn't that hard for them to flip it back. And then I just couldn't cast the last card in my hand.
Would you like to see the picture where I have two 10-10 Trample Vigilance guys on the board?
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty sweet.
Disgusting.
I guess it was okay. I mean, like, on turn five, it was a 5-mana 3/3 that drew a card, and then it was like a... Like... turned into a 5/5 at one point when it flipped.
Yeah.
But then I could still just block it, so I couldn't attack. And then it just flipped back. And then I just had to sit there for a long time with a card in my hand. Cause... And then I just eventually played the card, and I was like, this thing can fucking die. I don't care.
You drew me a card. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems interesting.
It's definitely a weird one. It creates an interesting tension.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Having two of them probably helps.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so The one match I lost, the guy just rolled me with a blue-white Flyers deck that was very, very fast. I never interacted with him at all. And then
didn't even look at me.
Yeah. And then
right by.
And then the other one is game one, he beat me with... so I'm playing blue-green, and he plays the Mana Scribe, which is the 0/3 guy that mills you when he comes into play.
Oh, right.
Mills you for three, and then if he has Delirium, he mills you for three every turn.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that might be a viable strategy.
Yeah, well, he also had Startled Awake.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is just kind of crazy. So he beats me game one, and then game two...
Wait, this was the draft?
Yeah, in the draft. And then in game two, I barely beat him, and then game three was I got the two sages out and just wrecked
him. Went to town.
Yeah.
Cool.
And destroyed the town because they were werewolves.
Yes.
Where'd you place all in all? Do you cash?
I did not.
Oh, so close.
It's really hard to cash when you go 6-3 day one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically, the only way you can cash is go 5-1.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you're not guaranteed.
Right. Right. Our friend Andrew Hudson finished 12th, though.
Yeah.
He got up there. Did you see him when you were in Albuquerque?
Yeah. His deck, he was really playing well. He was really, really good. Like, he was, like, totally in the zone. I could, like, just talking to him, you could see he was, like, really feeling it.
Yeah.
His day one deck was really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was just, like, very, very powerful. And his other decks he seemed like he was drafting really well. I mean, he obviously made 12, so he was obviously doing something right.
Yeah, he was studying a lot on the format. I mean, he was really jamming it.
He may or may not have had an Avacyn that did some things.
Oh, yeah. Some angel.
Gotta get a little lucky.
Flips in something or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. He was one match loss off of the Predatory Invite. He must have been at the top of the X3s, though.
He was. He was. Well, I mean, I think he might have been the top X3.
Damn, son.
Or maybe.
It's possible, because there could be
He might have been X2.
No, he was X3, because X2 gets an invite.
Oh, you're right. Yes, you're right. Yep.
I asked him online, too, and he's like, no.
Yeah, X2 automatically gets it in, yeah. But, yeah, so he was playing really well, and he was drafting at the big boy table, too, which is, another, just boon, right? Because it's like, it's okay to, like, you know, beat up on scrubs, but, you know, when you're playing against, like, know, like Neil Oliver and, you know, the likes of those kind of people, and you're still winning, that's great.
Yeah, that's really tough to do. Yeah. They definitely won at least enough to, you know, make a deep run, as they say.
Made some money, too. Like, I mean, at least $500.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Pays for your trip.
Yep.
That's awesome. That's great. We'll have to get him on the show at some point and congratulate him. Cool. Yeah. Those are things. Those are cards.
Are definitely things.
Our friend Peter did actually draft mono red for his second draft.
Oh, really?
Literally 17 mountains and, like,
yeah, boy.
Something like, get this, he had 9 red removal spells.
Oh.
So he had 3 fiery tempers.
Wow.
3 inner struggles, which is the one that makes them fight themselves.
That fight themselves?
Wow. Yeah.
That's an uncommon.
Is that the
I think it's a common.
Is it? Okay.
Is that the, like, the 2 blocking creatures?
No, yeah. No, it's just
thing.
The red and 3 target creature fights itself.
Oh, it deals power equal.
Yeah. Right.
Inner damage struggle. Equal to its power.
It's uncommon.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah. Then he had 3 of them, yeah.
Jesus.
And 3 fiery tempers.
Yeah.
He said, so something that's interesting to talk about this is the draft is really interesting with all of the exposed cards.
Right. So how does that work? Do they have the inserts that they used to have, like an Innistrad, where you, like, fill it out or?
No, they do. They do. Yeah, the checklist cards, they have those.
Okay. That's not.
But that's not, I mean, anything interesting. But, like, you have to, like, declare once you open the pack what
So when you open your pack, basically everybody reveals all of their flip cards and exposes them to all the people.
Right.
And then you can't hide your card when you draft it. So, like, for instance, when my second draft, when I drafted that Sage.
So you have to draft everything face up in front of you?
No, just the flip cards.
Just the flip card you can't.
The flip card can't be, like, face down, right?
You can't put it under your pile of cards. You have to put it on top. Right. So people, like, you don't have to tell people you're drafting it, but you have to make sure that if people are paying attention, they can notice that you've drafted.
Yeah, you can't, like, you know, you can't, like, put your hands over your cards. Right. And so, like, when I drafted that rare, it was pack one, pick one. I'm like, and I put it down before the other guy even drafted because I wanted him to know I was drafting a green card.
Right.
So that if he wants, he can stay out of green, right?
Yeah.
So it also could work negatively because he could, like, try to cut me from green.
Right. Right.
But probably that's not the best idea, right?
Right, right, right.
So it's just interesting. And also, like, for instance, say I'm drafting, in the very first draft when I drafted that Ulrich's Kindred. There was a red flip card next to me and a red card flip next to him.
Right.
So I'm like, if I take this red card, I know I'm going to get, like, 2 werewolves, right?
Yep.
And so I waited, right, until the guy to my right picked his card and he didn't pick the red card. Then I'm like, okay, I'll take this. I probably still would have.
Yeah.
Because that werewolf is, like, a build-around card that I really like. That,
yep.
And it's super powerful, right?
Yeah.
But
Which one?
The Ulrich's Kindred, the one that gives wolves that are attacking indestructible.
4 mana.
The
Ulrich's
you pay
Kindred?
Green.
Green and 3.
Okay, yeah.
So hard to beat that card, like, you know. Because you could just attack with all your wolves, right? And then, like, whichever one they block.
They're all, like, big and 4/2 tramplers. And
exactly.
It's just
like, exactly. Imagine your
threat of activation.
You're attacking with your 4/2 trampler.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is you can just attack with one dude, right? If it's big enough to get through, right? And then you're like, oh, okay. So that's kind of an interesting strategy because you can see what's coming down the pipeline.
Right, a lot of known information
in
the draft circle.
I haven't played with people good enough to pick up on these signals, but, you know, they're there. They're definitely there. I've played with a few. I think if you have a really – like, if you have a good pod, it's not just the people in the pod. It has to be the people, like, directly to your left and right that know, you know, understand what it means. So, like, I first picked an Avacyn Missionaries.
Right, the white flip.
Yeah.
It's so like broken.
A very good first
Another
pick.
Build around me uncommon, kind of.
Yeah, very little building, though. It's like a
4-mana 3-3.
I take
it's like, put up a tent around me. You just put up a tent near me.
I'll scoot in under it.
Yeah. Because, like, the True Faith Censors, which are good cards in the human decks, they're, like, pretty late picks. Like, you don't have to spend a high pick on them, so you can usually just wheel
them
early on.
6th or 7th.
Yeah.
Sometimes they even wheel.
And only a few decks want them.
Yep.
And typically that white deck does want it.
Yeah.
Like, any deck can play it, and it'll be okay, but people usually aren't even going to pick, like, it over a bear unless they have good synergies with it.
Mm-hmm.
So first picking a card like Avishan Missionaries is totally fine. And the guy to my right who's passing to me in packs 1 and 3 ended up in white. And I was like, dude, you saw me pick this. I guess it doesn't matter because you're passing to me, but...
Yeah.
Yes, it's probably a bad decision overall, I would think, because you're cutting yourself off from a third of the pack.
He also passed me a bunch of good white. I came out of pack one like mono white, so I was like, oh, white's open. Then he like jumps in at the end of pack one, I guess. Anyways, my deck was okay. I had a lot of good white cards. I got hooked up coming the other direction in white.
Right.
Because, you know, no one...
Because that guy was paying attention.
That guy was really... Well, he was just...
Yes, exactly.
I don't know if he was paying attention to what I took, but, you know, there's definitely, you know...
Yeah.
When two people upstream of you are drafting white cards, then
they don't seem to make it through.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to watch at the Pro Tour.
Fascinating.
Fascinating transition.
Yeah, it will.
If they actually, like, do coverage of it.
They'll do coverage of it. I mean, when they draft it at the, you know, day one, that's going to be a whole thing.
Cole, you need some temp work polishing watches on Friday?
Right.
I don't have your iPad anymore. I don't know how I'm going to watch the Pro Tour at work.
You can borrow mine if you want.
No, it's fine.
Mine's a nicer one, too.
I can just watch it on my phone.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited. Pro Tour time. That'd be great. But we have some other white cards we could talk about.
We do. In fact, we have some white cards that we can crack, sack, and bury.
Oh, snap.
Which is our segment where we take three cards on a theme, choose one we want to crack. We're super excited to play it. One we want to sack, we'll sacrifice it if we have to. And one we want to bury. If it gets destroyed, we won't regenerate it. How's that sound?
Sounds
good.
Yeah.
Well, in the spirit of the white humans deck that I played... we're going to crack, sack, and bury some white one drops because this set surprisingly has a few one drops that are decent.
Snazzy.
They're pretty good. So the first one, we're not going to do Stern Constable because he was a disappointment to me. But we are going to do Town Gossip Monger, which is a single white mana for a human. It's three people, but those three people are old, so they're a 1/1. And it has tap an untapped creature you control, transform Town Gossip Monger. It transforms into a red 2/3 that attacks each turn of Fable, I believe. Right?
Incited yep. Rabble.
Incited Rabble.
You can also pay 2 generic mana, and Incited Rabble gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
Oh, look at that.
Wow, the flavor on that card is
got angry.
So awesome.
It's great.
Yeah, I love it.
Like the white guys, the really peaceful guys, suddenly like just
got the torch.
Then they turn white into red, which is just great. I love it.
Granny's so
do you guys also howl whenever your guys transform? Because I do.
Wow, you're super annoying to play with.
You go, oh,
wow!
It's nighttime. I was thinking the other day that I kind of wish the transform trigger. It would be way more flavorful if it happens at the end of your turn because it's like it's nighttime now and right. Instead of at the beginning of the next upkeep.
Yeah.
But then you'd have to deal with like damage stuff. That's probably why they did it.
Yeah.
Because like if you've got damage on a creature and it transforms that turn.
Well, and it's the mechanic says if a spell wasn't cast, so like it also helps like, you know, do things like your opponent can do stuff at the end of turn. So
that's yeah.
Cool. So that's probably why it's designed that way.
Yeah, but if they said like, you know, if they passed the turn, you can be like at the end of your main phase,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you get priority there for a second. Anyways, the next card is Toppelgeist. It's single white mana for a 1/1 flyer. When Toppelgeist,
your spirit,
Toppelgeist. This looks like a cool old scroll.
It's a spirit, right?
Picture.
It is a spirit. I did not notice that the Toppelgeist was toppling over the candle in the photo.
Oh yeah, look at that!
It's like doing his thing.
He's like, hey.
But derp, derp. Erp, derp.
He says, he's a spirit, when he enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls, and he has Delirium at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep. If there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, tap target creature that player controls. And finally, Thraben Inspector. It's It's one mana for a 1/2 human. When Thraven Inspector enters the battlefield, investigate.
Is he? He's a human scout or a human?
Human soldier.
A human gadget.
And he's got a
human inspector.
Is that a he or a she?
I wish they had put constable on cards. Human constable.
This person's like in a, just like, just got such the shittiest look in his face.
That guy totally should be a human scout, right? He's going searching for stuff, right?
Right.
Well, he's an inspector. He's like, he's collecting clues. Scouts don't collect clues.
I think they got to keep to the cleric, soldier, blah, blah, blah. Kind of
spirit.
Warrior kind of thing.
He should be a human jerk face.
Yeah, because F the police, Evan.
He's like scowling. He's like clearly not happy with his job. He's like, I wish I'd gone to school for animal husbandry. I gotta pick up these weird, gross, what are these, purple pubes?
Anyways, okay,
well,
cool.
Well, since they were in your deck, you should have the best thing.
Like, all right, take away.
I will go first. I didn't play with Gossamonger, but I'll have an opinion. I'm going to crack Thraven Inspector, which is funny, it's the only common here.
Really?
It's the lowest floor.
Okay.
Sorry, highest floor. Well, Well, yeah, it gets you your card back, so you can always, like, cycle it late game. Late game, although topple guys could have some utility. I think it has the highest floor. And the ceiling for this card, it's really solid in the human decks, because if you have True Faith Sensor, when you equip the True Faith Sensor, which if you're playing a human deck, it's a really good card. I had three of them in my pool. I only played two of them, but I was like super. My best draws were when I could go one drop into True Faith Sensor. It was just like, and then, like, so punishing.
Do you equip on the next turn or do you wait and just keep developing?
It depends.
Your board?
Yeah. You know, depends on what else I have to do, whatever they do. But when I went like Topplegeist in a Truth Faith Sensor, typically I'd equip it because I can start getting in.
Yeah,
like,
it seems legit.
That's a clock. But it turns into a 3/3 when you equip the True Faith Sensor to it. A 3/3 Vigilance, which makes it like a legitimate card, and, you know, getting the clue back is really good.
Yeah, so if they use that removal spell, you're kind of up a card on it.
Get your clue
on. Totally.
Get your clue on.
Yeah, so I really like that card. I'm gonna sack the Gossipmonger, I think.
Ooh.
Because it's also a human. I think
I'm sensing a theme here, Evan.
I don't know. It seems really good. It turns into a 2/3 pretty quickly, and that's like, you know, in this sort of. Obviously, you're going to want to play one drops in an aggressive deck. There's not many like non-aggressive decks where you want one drops in. Mm-hmm. I feel like if any of these is not the best in like the ceiling for one of these cards that has the highest ceiling not in an aggressive deck is probably the Topplegeist. But you probably still want to play these one drops in aggressive decks, and this is pretty good because it can turn into a 2/3 pretty quickly. And then it's big. You'd probably get a good amount of damage in there before they come up with a way to deal with it.
I mean, in the dream scenario, you can play this guy in one, play a 2/2 on two, and transform him in that same turn.
And then the next turn, you're probably getting in for like 4 or 5 damage.
Yeah.
Probably 4.
And even if they do have something like stupid like that Pale Rider, the 3/3 horse, you can just spend 2 mana and like pump it.
Totally.
So.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, at the price point, there's not much that blocks a 2/3.
Yeah,
profitably. Like you maybe if they could play a 3-drop like the Dauntless Cathar. That's a 3/2, right?
Totally. And if they like trade a 3/2 or a 2/3
for
or something,
your 1-drop.
Yeah, you're up a mana. You're totally happy with it. I mean, yeah, we are talking about 1-drops here, so like the ceiling is pretty.
And there's not very many of them either.
Yeah, it's true. So I'll sack him and I'll bury the Topplegeist. The Topplegeist was okay for me. I mean, I had a couple of games where I would play him on one and then equip an equipment to him and get in there for a bunch of damage, and it was pretty relevant. I haven't had the first ability be relevant, and the last ability
I have heard
I was playing a
I have heard people talk about having the cool thing about having one drops that you don't think that are going to impact the board a lot is that you can sometimes not cast them on turn one and wait until turn two so that you have something to cast on turn two so things don't flip. The whole thing we were just talking about.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, like, people are saying maybe sometimes you don't cast your vessels. Like, you just you hold a vessel. Like, if you know you're not going to do something on turn two at all.
Yeah, and you just need something.
Does it matter if you play, like, your... Does it matter if you play your, like, Rancid Rat or, you know, any of these one drops that aren't going to really do anything? Is it better to sometimes just save it?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's probably... There's probably some amount of times where you'd want to do that. Although I never had this in my opening hand and not a True Faith Censor, so, like...
Yeah.
I was living in my own little magical Christmas land for if
you build a proper deck, like you were saying, that, you know, you try to have four or five two-drops, be them equipment or whatever, then it's less of an important, right?
Yeah. I think the Delirium deck is just... Or just Delirium generally is kind of hard to turn on. Mm-hmm. You don't have... I mean, you'll get it eventually. Like, if you just wait long enough and you have the cards in your deck, you'll probably get it eventually. But you do need... You actually do need to put a tiny bit of work into it. Because, like, some card types are just really hard to get in your graveyard. And unless you have something that mills or some way to discard cards...
Yeah, unless you're green or black, you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, and even in green...
It can be pretty easy in green.
It can, but I mean, the cards...
You can do Vessel, which almost gets you there, like, all by itself.
Yeah, but the cards that you want to turn it on are not cards that you want to play in a deck that plays a 1-mana 1/1 flyer. I find that's
true.
Like, that's the one thing I was just
talking about Delirium in general. Like, if you play, like, Vessel, the green Vessel, I mean, it puts an enchantment, probably a land, and a creature, and you get, like, three quarters and, you know, potentially everything, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, Fork in the Road is great because it gets a sorcery and a land, which are really hard.
Yes. Yeah, so I guess the... Yeah, so I guess Delirium's not hard generally to turn on, but you do have to put a little work into it, and I feel like you don't want those cards in a deck with Toppelgeist, generally.
No.
Like, if you're green, white definitely doesn't have a lot of great ways of turning Delirium on.
No.
And this guy either wants to go in white-blue or white-green. Probably white-blue.
Yeah.
I just put him in my deck because I already wanted to try the True Faith Censors.
Right.
I only had 3 2-drops. I just, you know, somehow just only ended up with 3 2-drops, and I kind of wanted to be sort of aggressive. And I was like, well, I've got these equipment, so, you know, this card's a little better. So he probably mostly wants to go in white-blue, and it's, I don't know, it's just like... He wants to be aggressive. It's just sort of awkwardly placed, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you can get that Delirium on, I mean, that's like, he's a removal busted. Spell now, yeah. You know?
He's busted then.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to bury him. Even though he was good for me the other day.
Cool. Just throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
What do you
he's
got,
a
Larry?
Geist. He'll survive.
Let's
topple that thing over.
Yeah.
That bus and kill a bunch of poor tourists.
Wait, what?
He's a Toppelgeist. He topples things.
Okay.
I was trying to find a reason to not agree with you. So I pretty much agree with all your stuff. The only thing I have to say, the only caveat I have is I think that people are way blowing Thraben Inspector out of proportion. Like, I think the card is good and makes the cut every time. But I just do not think he's, like, the bomb that, like, all these people are like, oh, he's just so great and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, he's just a 1-2 for one, like, you know.
Yeah. People have been comparing him to Elvish Visionary, and, like, that's a fine comparison, but, like, I think people like Elvish Visionary too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember arguing with Yorick when we were making one of our Team Sealed pools,
yeah.
And he had, like, 5 Elvish Visionaries in there. And he's like, but this card is so good. I'm like, yeah, but you're just going to draw more 1/1s for 2 mana.
Yeah, it's just like even like they have that cryptolith right deck, which is playing 4 of them just so that they can block and make stuff and blah blah blah. And I'm just like, this card's just so bad. I don't know. I mean, it's good in the elf deck, the modern elf deck, right? Where, like, you know, having an elf matters and cheap and blah blah blah. Right?
He's like part of a
you're talking
infinite
about
combo,
Elvish
right?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's also part of an infinite combo. Is it Infinite? In Legacy, right? Doesn't he have some crazy combo? I remember Yorick was playing.
Yorick plays elves in Legacy, but it's a role player in that deck. It's not a...
Yeah, it's nothing great.
It's nothing... Really doesn't, no, you just a Titania, and there's like a couple other elves that you really play.
Yeah, he's deck. Part of a combo that like... It's like a card that's like an elf that taps for 2 mana that you can only spend on elves, and then another card bounces it.
Yeah,
and
then
so you can like bounce it and play it over and over again to draw your whole deck to find your Craterhoof Behemoth or whatnot. Yeah. Anyways.
Or you can just cast a really big Court of Calling and get your Craterhoof out. Anyway. Sorry, Larry, I did not interrupt you. That's all you got?
That's all I got.
Okay, then I will disagree with you wildly.
You're going to do it in a crazy voice, though, if you're going to do it wildly.
I'm going to put... I'm going to crack Toppelgeist. I think this guy is nice. I agree with you. Probably Delirium is not the best thing to do in white. But, you know, 1-1... You know, it's tough to play 1-1 for 1 mana. A 1-1 flyer, though, kind of baseline can kind of get there because you'd be surprised at how many times a 1-1 flyer for 1 ends up doing 4 to 6 damage to somebody.
You're also forgetting, though, there are tons of things in this format that make 1-1 spirits.
That's true. Make a lot of little...
That's why...
Typically in the white
that's
world,
why
too.
I don't think the card is
as
the
good.
Crack.
Right,
the
right.
Sack.
You're probably right about that. I do think, though, that it has the highest upside of... if you get to turn on the
that
Delirium, like it kind of becomes obscene what this card can do.
It also wears equipment the best.
It wears equipment really nice. I mean, I don't know, just the baseline.
I don't know. I think the Sighted Rebel wears equipment pretty well too.
Right,
that's true.
That's 2/3.
Like, whatever it is, pumping the and then like just whatever has that.
The problem
true.
With the Town Gossiper though is I just feel like if it's not on one. On turn one, or like it comes out within the first couple turns of the game.
It's terrible.
Like, I couldn't imagine top decking this guy and just being like, fuck. Great. What am I going to do? Transform it into 2/3 and run it into something stupid, you know? And like, maybe it pumps and trades or something, but like,
well,
whatever.
I mean, that's the thing is that it will pump, it will trade with a 3-star or something.
Right, whatever.
Because if you draw it late and you activate it, which you'll probably have dudes just laying around to do it, you might be able to make that thing like a
6/3
or something, right? And so it's going to kill a 3x creature.
And they're
going to
throw their little 3/2 in there that when it dies, it investigates.
Well, that's fine, but it's not like just completely dead.
No, it's not completely dead.
Unless they have a 4/4.
No, then you just
then
pump
you
it.
Pump it enough.
You just pump it enough to kill it.
Eat it.
So
trade off with it.
They will at least have to trade it with a 3x.
It gets +2/+0.
Yes.
Plus no.
It gets +1/+0,
plus
right? But it's
for
two mana.
For 2 mana, yeah.
Yeah, but so you know, if you late game, you probably can make it a 5/3 or something, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Again, it's. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's.
The problem is the attacks each combat if able gives the opponent all the choice in terms of what they trade it off with on their board, which is. What is
but
limiting
least,
about
but
that
at
card?
Least at least you know it won't be a 2x. It'll have to be a 3x something.
Right.
Which means it's a pretty reasonable creature. Because a 3-power creature, that's pretty good in this format, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely...
Like, if you can get a 4/4 on the board, that thing seems, like, really good. Like,
But I'm still going to bury it. I think it's not that great. Which leaves me to the Inspector Gadget, which is going to be my crack, because at least it replaces itself. In late game, I'd almost feel like I'd rather draw the Inspector just to lay it down. And
I thought you cracked the Toppelgeist.
I can do this,
sacked
right?
Sacked it.
I
so
cracked,
you did the
no, no,
sack
no, no,
first?
No. I cracked the Toppelgeist.
And then he buried the
buried the angry mob.
Okay.
And then sacked, but I forgot that I had...
Three of an Inspector.
Yeah, but
okay.
Then I messed it up.
Inspector Gadget. Man, that thing, I wish you could... I wish the magnifying glass was an equipment that you could equip to it. Then we could really live in Flavortown.
Right. It needs like a... needs like a... like some kind of helicopter hat that you could equip to it. Give it flying. Anyways... Yeah, those are white one drops.
There should be an equipment that does that.
There was tattered wings or whatever in the old Innistrad set. I was like, just give a creature flying.
Are you talking about the magnifying glass or the?
Yes, there should be a magnifying.
What would it do though? Like
just exactly what whenever a creature deals damage, it like so the ability that's on the ongoing investigation should be like on an artifact, right?
Okay. That card would be awful.
Well, no. If it gave like, say, like cost
whenever
two.
Whenever this creature deals damage, like loot or something.
No, investigate.
Or investigate. All right.
So, like, say, give a creature, like, you know, so, for instance, the broken shard of glass or something.
It would have
to
be damage, period, though. If it was damage to players, it would be awful.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm willing to always make cards way more powerful.
I think I had the green.
Like, you know, gives
Barbridge control.
Plus one, plus zero if it deals. You know, that Briar Bridge.
Briar Bridge control. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if it had that text, that'd be cool. You know, the Briar Bridge.
Yeah, that's the 3/3, right?
3/3 for green and three, and if it deals combat damage. It
seems legit.
Oh, here. So let me tell you this story. This is super awesome. So this is my day two first deck, the werewolf deck. So I'm playing this guy, and he was playing this really strange deck. It was like Grixis Control. So it was a very strange deck. So at one point, he casts Geist Blast, which is the red and two, deal two damage to something.
Right.
And then later on, you can spend blue and two and copy a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So on the board, I have my Silver Fur Partisan, and I have my Uvenwald Mysteries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he draws, and he plays his land, and the game has been going on for a very long time.
Uvenwald.
And he goes, I'll throttle your Silver Fur Partisan, and in response, I'll spend blue and two and copy it and kill your
tutu.
Your Gastrin Arsonists.
Oh, okay.
The 5/3 guys.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, trigger when you target my wolf, and I get a 2/2 wolf. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, trigger when you target my werewolf. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, it's wolf or werewolf.
Yeah.
So I get a 2/2 and a 2/2. And then they both die, and I get a clue and a clue. And then I sack the clue, draw a card, make a dude.
Make a 1/1.
Sack a dude. And he's like, wow.
That is so raunchy. That is so raunchy.
So brutal.
I make just 6 power back on the board, and I draw 2 cards.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that the clues are good.
Yeah.
Like
I honestly was skeptical of the clues initially, and they're just really good.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta pay some mana, but it's fine. You can. It's great because in green, they just like get tacked on for free, and you're always the one ahead because your creatures are huge.
Yep.
So like you always have the time to do it.
Right.
That's how I feel.
And you get to just keep drawing through your deck, smoothing things out. That's really strong.
It's sweet.
Yeah. Cool.
And then that guy, the Tireless Tracker, is just busted on levels. It's just
tireless.
It's tireless.
So tireless. Yeah. That guy, the more we talk about him for possible standard application, the more I think he's like, man.
So I was just talking with
that
Peter.
Guy should be like, you should at least have access to 4 of them in your Bant Coco decks, I think.
Maybe 5. So I was talking with Peter about standard moving forward, and you know, we played Coco last season,
right?
So it makes sense to want to try to, like, you know, carry that forward if you can. And so we jokingly, somewhere in the middle of the conversation, we're like, so what I love about the Tireless Tracker is it feels exactly like what Pack Rat was when Mono Black came out. So there's like this one dude in Japan who's like, you know, I kind of like this card. Like, I should play, like, 2 of them and see, like, how well. And the guy plays 2 of them, and he wins, like, his GP or whatever, right? And then, like, you know, next week, some people are like, oh, the card seems good. Maybe we should try more of these. And, like, you know, so, like, you know, like, a week and a half later, like, everybody's playing 4, and it just dominates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, last week at the Star City Games, guys, like, had 2 in there, right?
Yeah.
And now this week at the Invitational, they're like, 3 and 4.
Yeah, everybody's playing.
They're like, you just know it's the new pack rat. It's like, yeah, why was anybody not playing 4 of these when you could have?
Right. Well,
it seems like one of the better cards in the mirror, too.
Oh, right.
God, yeah, it's just broken in the mirror, yeah.
Well, considering that the mirror is probably played over and over and over again, looking at the recent SCG Columbus Open from Star City, the top 8 had 5 Bant collected company text.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You're looking at the open results?
I'm looking at the open results, right. Yeah, from Columbus.
Let me pull those up.
Green Red Eldrazi took first place with Joshua Dickerson, and then it was Bant Company took second, Bant Company took third, Blue Red Tutelage took fourth. Ooh la la.
That's real. I would have expected that to have been like, you know.
I would have expected that last week to show up a little bit more, and I think people are finding, like, I think last week people realized, oh, you can play Tormenting Voice and not be laughed at.
Yeah.
And now people are like, oh, wait, what if you play Tormenting Voice and Tutelage, like, and Chandra?
Just really go off.
Nobody laughs at
so
you then.
Does that Tutelage deck have the goggles?
I don't think it played. I think that was the whole thing, is that it took out...
It doesn't really need to, but it was just, it's interesting.
No,
for that.
No, now it's just down to Chandra, Jace, and just a bunch of spells.
That's sweet, though. I love that, like, an Izzet deck is finally, like, around. It's been so long since that thing. It's just such a sweet idea.
And it's such a weird, like...
It's playing Fevered Visions in the sideboard?
Oh, yeah.
Because I guess with Sphinx's Tutelage, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, also, like, so, you know, the thing is that, like, it's weird. It's like, so those people, like, who are playing, like, slower decks. So mm-hmm. I was watching Todd Anderson play some guy who's playing the black-white control.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, literally probably 20-25% of their deck is creature removal, right?
Right.
So they only take so much of that stuff out, right?
Right.
And even if they did... Their decks are still just tend to be very reactive.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he did is he put a turn 3 Fevered Visions down.
Yeah.
Followed by a turn 4 Fevered Visions.
Oh, right.
So every turn you're drawing 3 cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can only play 1 land per turn.
Mm-hmm.
So those 3 cards, you know, in general, 40% of them are going to be land, right?
Mm-hmm. What's Fevered Visions do again?
So at the beginning of each player's end step, that player draws a card. If that player
it's the new blue,
is
red
your
enchantment.
Opponent... And okay. has 4 more cards in hand, Fevered Vision deals 2 damage to him or her. So if they have 4 more cards in their hand, they take 2.
So it's like reverse rack. Not quite okay. Vice, black
and,
Vice.
And
but
you just mill the shit out of them, too.
And yes. Yeah, you're and both drawing. God. So you're drawing a card in your end step, they're drawing a card in their end step.
Yeah.
They're taking 2-4 damage a turn and milling.
So the cool thing that the guy did...
Get poison counters and damage.
So the cool thing is the guy got... So the guy could only do so many things, and he's, like, you know, playing something like... So it was so awesome. So the guy's, like, doing his thing. He's going along, and he's like, draw a card. He's got... And then Todd Anderson takes all his creatures out, mm-hmm. right? So he's not playing Jace or Thing in the Ice.
Right.
So the guy's, like, got removal that's completely dead, because the guy doesn't know he's going to do this, right?
Yeah. This is against the control deck?
Yeah, so Todd Anderson was playing blue-red Thing in the Ice.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy was playing black-white control.
Yep.
So Todd Anderson takes all of his creatures out and puts Fevered Visions in and like another Chandra and like slows things down. So then the guy's like, he's like turn 4. He's like, I guess I'll play Gideon. And he's like, okay, draw your 2 cards. He draws 2 cards and he's like, okay, Fevered Visions activates. I'll redirect 2 of the damage to Gideon.
Oh, nice.
Take 2 damage, redirect it to Gideon. So the guy plays Gideon and all he gets is a 2-2 out of it. And then it just goes crazy. Like, it gets worse and worse, right? So the guy's, like, finally, you know, turn 6, he plays, like, Soren or something, mm-hmm. right? He's like, okay.
Yeah, you can do.
He's like, turn Soren over, and he's like, draw a card?
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right, so and he doesn't have any
draw
creatures.
As many as you want. Yeah.
So he has no creatures right. or planeswalkers.
To target.
So the only thing he can do is draw cards. Which is not good because...
No.
So the guy, like, does that. He does, like, 3 damage or something from it, right? Revealing Read the Bones. Right?
Oh, no.
Super awesome. He reveals Read the Bones. And he's like, okay, I take 3. And then what happens? He has to discard down to 7. He has so many cards. And he's just never going to get out. And he just dies. It was sweet.
That's wow. great. They got there. Yeah, so, version of that deck took 4th by Noah Walker. And then Mono White Humans... was 5th, and then 6th, 7th, and 8th were all Bant Company decks.
Yay! Hey.
So, okay, explain, Larry, can you explain Bant Company? Like, what's great here? Is this just...
So, the first
everything.
Thing that's... The first
2-for-1s galore?
Well, the first thing that's interesting is the deck mostly plays Flash-like.
Right, exactly.
So you've got the Bounding Crisis.
Mm-hmm. We still can't do better than Bounding Crisis, guys. Come on.
Card is really good.
I don't know. It might not be that bad.
It's really good. Like, also remember, like, in a world of where, like, people are playing like this white weenies. So they declare their attack days and you're like, oh, okay, I'll play this. Tap your big guy down. Okay, would you like to send your 2/1 first strike into me now? No. Okay.
All right.
Or you let them attack and you're like, oh, look, I'll play this guy and block your 2/1 first strike.
It'll help you get through the boards that people are trying to stall with Archangel of Tides as well.
Yes.
Which is nice. Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Then there's the Collected Company, which is a flash.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got
Avacyn.
You got Avacyn, which is flash.
Avacyn, sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the other thing is that, just like we were talking about how, like, green typically doesn't get card advantage.
Right.
There's tons of card advantage here. So you've got the Duskwatch Recruiter, which has a mini Coco.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Coco
on a 2/2.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's baby Coco, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got Tracker, which is card advantage.
And becomes a big threat.
Then Den Protector, which is card advantage.
Mm-hmm.
What else is in there?
Well, there's Ojutai's Command, which can kind of get something back, which helps in the flash a little bit.
Which is part of that flash thing, but I do not
some
think
amount that, of Jace.
That card should not be in there.
Yeah.
I think that card is just actively bad in that deck.
Mm-hmm.
People are playing Jace.
Yep. But they're not playing four.
Some of them are.
Yes. No. All of those in that I think are playing three
or
less.
The guy who came in second has four.
Really?
Yeah, he's got four Jace, 2 Nissa, 4 Reflector Mage, 4 Sylvan Advocate, 4 Bounding Crisis, 4 Duskwatch Recruiter, 2 Archangel Avacyn, 3 Tireless Tracker, 4 Coco, 3 Demoka's Command, and Ojutai's Command.
Hmm. The other two decks were playing 3 and 2.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of little, you know, you can tweak a little bit here and there.
I mean, you can put in some Deathmiss Raptors, you can put in some Den Protectors.
You can't put Deathmiss Raptor in.
Yeah, people
if you don't play the Den Protector Death.
Well, you
Raptor.
Just can't get double green easily.
Oh,
so it's easy to get green and white, or blue and white, or whatever, or blue and green. And you can see they have all of those combinations there, right? But they don't have any single double color except for Avacyn.
Avacyn, right?
Which, you know, by turn 5 is probably okay, right?
Right.
So there's also just like a lot of exile happening right now with Declaration in Stone everywhere.
Yep.
And
yes.
Anguish Unmaking.
Yep.
What are the other big ways to exile things that people? I mean, Silk Wrap.
Yeah, Silk Wrap.
That type of thing.
The white and one.
And, Stasis Snare.
Stasis Snare. Like, there's just no shortage of stuff that exiles. And
it's hard to tap out against this deck. It's hard to, like, try to race them. They could just, like.
Yeah.
When they just, like, pass with 4 mana up, like, that could be a Bounding Crisis and a Reflector Mage, and then
you're
in trouble.
Well, and the other thing that's really cool that a couple of people are talking about, that so say you get the turn 2 Duskwatch Recruiter, and then they don't do anything, and it flips. So on turn 4, you know, is it Collected Company that's sitting there? Is it Bounding Crisis? Or is it an Avacyn that costs 1 less? At 4 mana. So it's like, so you're playing around these things, and are you playing around like Avacyn, which is making all your shit indestructible, or can, like, you know, block and just wreck you? Or is it going to be, you know, they flash in like you just said, they're going to flash in like a Reflector Mage and a Bounding Crisis. Like, if you prepare for one of them, you're not prepared for the other one, probably.
That sounds like a nightmare for a control deck.
Yeah.
To try and play around. Well, a clunky sorcery speed control deck.
and then the other thing, that's the other thing that's really cool is like several times I saw them play against like an Esper control, and they were literally out carding them.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems like this is the, I mean, it's funny. It looks like black white certainly showed up in the top 24, but got squeezed out of the top 8 by this kind of faster Band Company deck that could kind of play under it. It's funny because I feel like control is. It's control has turned into tap out sorcery speed magic, and the aggro, like the mid rangey creature deck, is playing at flash speed at the end of the turn. It's like, what's happening?
Well,
it's funny.
We've talked about it before. It is kind of by design, right?
Yes, like, no, it's absolutely by design.
WotC's throwing like really cool spells onto creatures and just making them cost more, or even now cost less, right?
Right.
Whereas, like, you know, you get, like, insane removal, like, you know, Declaration in Stone and, you know, Ruinous Path and all these things, right? But you got to, like, do it at slow speed.
Right. You get it at sorcery speed. I mean, Collected Company was definitely a... That's a strong card that's really pushing this deck.
I'm surprised that card's not Mythic.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's...
I mean, it's a complicated card, too, right? It's not simple card, right? You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of... It's not like Days Undoing complicated.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like weird stack things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
Take another... End the turn? Draw a million cards?
I think it's not Mythic because if you look at the...
artwork?
No.
That is not Mythic artwork. Yes. That is like a
it's
weird...
clearly not Mythic artwork. But I'm trying to see what was the cons. There was a 6-mana one with Ferocious. I play it in my cube where you dig 8 cards, and then if you've got the Ferocious, you can put 2 creatures into play, like, without the mana cost.
Yeah, the green-green and...
Green-green and 4, or whatever it is. Which, you know... I think the deck building requirements is what kind of took it down from Mythic status, and that it's like you got to put in this little limit. But you know, this is new Magic where 3 mana cost creatures are insanely good.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at sort of like the strategic or like tactical complication a card has, I mean, that shouldn't necessarily make it like a Mythic card. Because I mean, if you look at any of the commands, you know, like the tactical implications of a Tarkas command or like Dromoka's command, like even if you know your opponent has it and they make an attack, you're like, god damn it, there's just like no great way. Like there's so much you have to kind of like take into account before you get involved with blocks or what have you.
So given everything that we've seen and, you know, the propensity for pros to like control, but also that like red, like super aggressive deck, like Atarka-esque has won the last Pro Tours. What do you think?
What's coming in the Pro Tour? Coming down the pipeline? I have a feeling you're going to just see a kind of mix of... I don't know if there's a... I'm very jaded right now, and I feel like there isn't... We're not going to get the Pro Tours where, like, Mono Blue comes out of nowhere or something like that. Or I feel like these SCGs are pretty good indicators of what the meta is going to be. So I wouldn't really be surprised just to see... You know, Brad Nelson shows up with Bant Collected Company, and the aggressive players show up with these kind of, you know, Kibler is going to be showing up with this deck.
No, he only plays green.
I know, but this is as green as a deck you're going to get.
No, I agree. He'll play something like this.
You're going to see. I have a feeling you're going to see a bit overplay of the blue red control decks because I think that seems like a kind of cool control option. And
we still haven't seen Esper Dragons show up,
right?
And, like, all those cards are still there.
I think it's too slow.
I think that the mana base is really tough for these decks. I mean, Bant Company... I don't know why Bant Company gets away with its mana base. But then as you've pointed out, Larry, it doesn't really play a lot of double color cost casting stuff. And all these removal spells, if you noticed, are all, like...
Double black. Counterspell, Sumogar Scorn, double blue.
Yeah, the... I have seen, like...
Then you need to play white consistently, too, if you want to cast your...
Declaration Stone.
I don't think you want to... Well, so here's the thing. I think I've seen, like... a few attempts at the deck, and it looks like they're basically blue-black, and then they splash white for Ojutai, and maybe, like, a couple Anguished Unmaking. But, like, Declaration in Stone is kind of, like, a little dicey. I think you have to rely on, like, Ultimate Price and cards like that instead of...
Grasp of Darkness.
Yeah, maybe like Grasp of Darkness or something. Yep. But you need like... It is weird because you have Silumgar Scorn and Grasp of Darkness, and it's like you really want to be able to get both of those on time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It might be possible.
There are 8 blue-black lands, right?
There are, yeah.
So seems like you could do it. I mean, a lot of stuff's going to come in play tapped, but...
And 8 blue-white lands, too. So there's like... I think it's all about like figuring out the mana base, and
so even though
someone's going to do it,
even though I'm not a fan of his attitude, Ari Lex wrote a pretty good article about the nature of building things depending on whether you're a shard or a wedge. I don't remember. I think it's the shard you want Battlelands, and if you're a Wedge, you want Shadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I don't remember the exact thing. I just read it today, and I just was glossing over it before I came here. But anyhow, he was talking about how his team has been working on just the idea of what you were saying. Yeah. It's funny when you said it, because it made me think of what they were saying, is that like there is like literally like engineering or science behind figuring out what the proper build is based mm-hmm. upon whether you're a Shard or a Wedge mm-hmm. or just an ally.
Right.
And that is what they came to the conclusion of. For at least for their team, that like in one case it was, you know, Shard, it was one thing, and if it was a Wedge, it was something else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting that you thought the same thing,
right?
Just like
I'm a genius.
Yeah. if you're an ally, you just need the mana to stand up to bullies and go to the bathroom with people if they feel uncomfortable.
Unless you're in North Carolina,
if you're a Shard, you want to live in the shadows, right? Yeah. Anyways, yeah, it's interesting. I think that'll be the biggest contribution probably that the pros make to this meta, is hammering out these mana bases, because they have the time, the persistence, and the kind of collected knowledge base to really.
Also, colorless Eldrazi.
Right.
Still kind of a question mark.
So
there.
some people were trying that your buddy, the Displacer, in those Bant Company decks. But I just think that's a mistake.
Yeah, you got to do...
It's like you've got three colors.
How much mana can you keep up, guy?
Yeah, he's like, so you're going Bant, and then you're just going to throw colorless in there too, right?
You know, I saw down here on at the Open, the deck lists for the Open, at 9th and 10th place are two Naya Nahiri decks.
Sweet.
Yeah, by Jacob Bard and Andy Ferguson.
Yeah, and it's kind of got me thinking about Matt's idea to play Nahiri and Displacer in the same deck again.
Right.
Which mm-hmm. I'm kind of into that. I know we kind of devolved into an argument of whether Gideon or Thoughtknot Seer combos better with Displacer's ability. Which is actually a really interesting sort of conversation, but like kind of got off track.
Yeah, forgot that there was the real point was that you have Nahiri and Displacer. That's really the.
I mean, it seems like there's a world where you could play Displacer and traverse the Uvenwald and a toolbox of EBT creatures that might be like I just want to displace. What's it called? A Tarka a bunch of times.
Going to Displace and that place. Oh, does this deck have Displacer?
This deck doesn't have Displacer, but it has that Traverse the Uvenwald.
Oh, geez, with a Tarka.
With a Tarka. It's got a Tarka. All right, let's just read it out. So this is the Jacob Bard version. It's got 4 Deathmist Raptor, 4 Den Protector, 4 Lamholt Pacifist, which is starting to show up.
That's the 3/3 for 2 mana we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. That flips the
limited,
4/4.
Limited
which is,
bomb.
Which is actually... If you think about it, super, super good against, like, even the Sylvan Advocate
mm-hmm.
is really good. It's a 2/3 because it blocks all of the Council's Lieutenants. That's 2/1 first striking, like, block, right? But now you get a 3/3 and you're like, sure.
Right. That'll upgrade itself. Sylvan Advocate is 4 of. Then Avacyn is a 2 of. Dragon Lord Atarka, 1. 1 Limvala, 1 Nissa Vatsudrasir. 4 Nahiri. And 3 Nissa, Voice of Zendikar. 4 Dromoka's Command, 3 Declaration of Stone, and 2 Traverse the Uvenwald. So it's got a little bit of that, as Zach was kind of playing with, that Tutor Box effect, where it can kind of Tutor Box. Tutor Up
tutor
effect.
Tutor Box.
Episode name. where it can kind of like call up what it needs when it needs it.
It should have more Uvenwald.
I think like that's the Pack Rat mistake, where it's like, I'm just going to play 2 of these. Like that actually, if there's one card, maybe, I know we're not doing faux bets because we're all tired, but if there's one card that I could see having...
And Clueless.
Yes. If we could have a breakout, it could be Traverse is like shows up in a big way.
I was watching one of the commentators, and they were calling it Transverse. And I was like, oh, God, it is not Transverse.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm not like really a fan of this deck.
It doesn't look as sexy as I want it to.
It's just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, it doesn't feel really focused. It feels like there's the kernel of an idea there. And then, like, but it's like
I'm not sure what it's like, doing with Nahiri in this deck.
Yeah, well, like, where's the synergy?
Okay, well, the one card that I definitely don't like is I don't really like the Nissa in that deck. Like, what's the Planeswalker doing? Nissa.
Well, I think...
Is it just blocking? I mean...
I think it's just...
getting plus, a forest?
It's plussing all your, like, smallish dudes. So you've got all these 2/3s, 3/3s, and whatever. Seems, and it's just like...
Seems bad. Like,
it does seem bad.
Like, if you have tokens, it seems great, right? Mm-hmm. Or you have, I mean, if you're going super... What's the other guys look like? Is he? Did they run the exact same list? Are they friends?
Let me look. He came in 14th, Andy Ferguson, and
he's
ran...
He's a really good deck builder, too.
He ran a little bit different. He's playing Chandra's instead of Nissa.
See, which that's makes that. A lot see, of sense. Okay, already I'm on board. Yeah. Like, would that be? See, because like, that's a card that like just.
See, this actually seems.
He's not playing Traverse either.
No, he's playing Oath of Nissa's though, which is kind of seems nice. So he's playing four Death Mist, four Den Protector.
Also good for your mana, right? Because mm-hmm. you can cast all your Planeswalkers with any
color.
Right, seems good, right? Like if you have bad mana, like it doesn't.
So he's got
yeah.
four Raptors, four Protectors, four Advocates, three Archangel, one Dragon Lord Atarka, two Nissa Vastwood Seer, two Chandra, four Nahiri, one Silk Wrap, two Dromoka's Command, four Oath of Nissa, four Declaration in Stone. So this seems a little bit more
so
hammered
like
out.
All of that minus maybe like the Dromoka's Command doesn't seem very good in that deck.
Yeah, I mean,
like it feels, but like you know, he's playing the four stone, right?
Right.
So like, I kind of get where this guy's going more with that build.
I'm still not sure what Nahiri is doing in this deck. I mean, I guess just drawing cards.
Yes, draws cards.
Just like battling, the
kills
chase.
Things. If it goes ultimate,
well,
it goes and gets a.
Nahiri doesn't draw cards. It rummages.
She rummages. Yeah. So you know another thing that's interesting about the whole Pro Tour now that I found is this one and the last one is that they've extended the time period. By a week.
Oh, really?
So it used to be 2 weeks after the product
right.
was released.
Yeah.
And now it's 3 weeks.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, so we have a whole nother week to figure out.
No. It's
no,
this.
It's is it this week? Oh, okay. We went 3 weeks.
Which is 3 weeks.
God, where has my life gone?
So, but it's interesting because, like, you know, like you said, now you get like.
No, it is 2 weeks.
Is it 2 weeks?
It's just the first standard events happen the day it releases now instead
okay.
of.
Yeah,
okay, so thing. it must have been a week after then. It used to be.
Okay.
It used to be quicker,
right?
All
right.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So there was because I remember specifically that when they used to have these SCG things, it was the pinnacle event, right, or premier event.
Yeah.
That happened, and then it was the Pro Tour,
mm-hmm.
and now
is
it's
on. It's on Magic Online, right? No, I think I assume what they want to do is make it so people who can't like go into a testing house a week before have access to it on Magic Online.
Well, Magic Online comes. Has would have been Friday,
yeah. Right.
So they give you that
last
week.
Friday.
Yeah. So now you know people who are qualified, you know, by themselves have right. plenty of time to draft online,
which is total bullshit. By the way, it should just. I mean, the day they release the product,
oh yeah, yeah.
Online should be exact.
I thought you're saying it's total bullshit that they give them the option.
No.
Well, I don't know. I understand they want to funnel business to local game stores, and I think that's
yeah.
that's laudable.
I think that's
laudable, also a
but,
nice cover for we don't. Don't always have our shit together.
No, I don't. See, I don't think that's the case. I mean, it doesn't seem like. I mean, they could get their shit together, like
yeah,
you know, however many.
That's true.
It just it feels like it's this stupid thing where they're trying to like you know protect
well,
the interest, and I don't
are.
Think it does anything. I mean,
no.
The people are going to play in their underwear and
right.
hit the game are going to go then do that,
and
that's
the
all they're.
People who want to play in the game store are going to go play
exactly.
In the game
yeah.
Store. I mean, I'm sure it helps a little bit of a bump, but I'm sure it's not. As much as everybody thinks
maybe
it
it's a public health thing. They just want to get the unwashed masses up off their
no, because they don't wash themselves
asses.
When they come. Sometimes it's not like.
But at least they had to walk to the bus stop.
Yeah.
So they bring bus stop smells as well as
it's a little bit of cardio. It's not much, but it's something.
I had to play a guy in the day one.
Yeah.
That was. And this is not disparaging at all.
Right.
Like
I'm not trying to call it, and I'm not trying to be an asshole.
Right.
But like,
he
smell like shit, and I fucking hate that guy.
That's exactly yeah. Well, I mean, the guy was huge. I mean, he was very, very big.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, he was very obese.
Mm-hmm.
And
like
the chairs
did.
There were like intolerably like no support whatsoever.
Right.
So even they were hurting me, and I'm like you know 180 pound
mm-hmm.
guy, and I'm like this chair is like basically looking to like just blow apart. And I'm thinking this guy is just going to wreck this, but he just smelled terrible.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm like, let me beat this guy 2-0 so I can leave.
Yeah.
if I can, to me, the worst stink that ever happens in Magic tournaments is when you're playing against the guy. He's like, and it's tense, and he's looking at his cards, and he goes,
you just breathe.
It's like big sighs, blows it straight at you, and you're like, oh, no.
You can feel like the heat in the air.
Yeah.
You feel your face melting.
I like block up my nose, I close my mouth, and I just like wait it out.
Just you just want to like deliver the smell matrix, the smell monologue for the Matrix.
Oh,
it's the smell, Morpheus.
And everyone's, you know.
Yeah, that's a great line.
The humans, they stink.
Your stench. It's palpable.
Yeah, I make a point of carrying deodorant around with me, and I make a point of putting it on when I go and play Magic.
Well played.
I don't want to be that guy.
I put it on when I go there. I also drink a lot of water because a lot of the times, like,
I also know that I'm going to sweat a lot too, so I'm trying to like get it.
Yeah, and like you know, like people when you're like in a really tense situation,
yeah,
your mouth
the worst.
Gets really dry.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing is that like nervous sweat is very different than just regular sweat.
Right,
it actually does smell more. So
so hopefully the predator will just be too grossed out by you to eat you. Is that the idea?
I alpha strike you. I don't even want to reach over and pick up your car to read what this guy is.
So that's what it was like, you know, like thousands of years ago, if you stunk really bad, maybe the cougar didn't chew on you, right?
He smells dead already.
Oh, my God.
Anyways. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the Pro Tour and what's coming down the pipeline.
So one thing, what would you like to see played there, or what would you like to see? Like for me, I'd love to see like I'd love to see like some like super like kind of breakout thing. Like
I think of this. I know we all complained about Eldrazi, but like that was probably the best modern Pro Tour I've seen ever.
It was fun and it was interesting to watch. And you know, sure, maybe it was, you know, quote
format
unquote
destroying.
Yeah, maybe it was a mistake by design, but. Again, I'm happy when they make cards that are too powerful.
Right. I think they're careful about doing that for standard, and so that's why I'm tempering my expectations. But honestly, I don't know. I'd love to see a Tutelage deck make a strong run or something. Something
unique.
Weird and unique. I'd even like to see Thingin' a Nice like show up in a strong way.
Or like the Cryptolith right.
Right.
You know,
right.
Something that's bonkers and out there. Or like some, like, you know, deck that abuses Traverse the Uvenwald, right?
Right. I could see Traverse showing up in a big way. I have a feeling green is going to be a player just because of Coco and Traverse, and it has some really strong spells.
Yep.
I think definitely the Bant Coco is probably, like, the deck with the biggest target on its head
going into the
Pro Tour.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how that shows up. I mean, I would prefer not to see a bunch of black-white-controlled mid-range decks. I just feel like...
I think the one thing I do love about that Coco deck is that it's got the inclusion of the two Avacyn, which is like completely and anti-Coco, right?
Right, right.
Like the whole deck is always about like you can't even play a 4-drop, right? It's got to be all 3-drops, right?
Yep.
And I'm going to play this busted 5-drop.
Yeah, Avacyn, because it's just so stupid. I like to see Craig Wesco pilot, you know, some white weenie deck into the top 64. That would be fun to see.
64, that's all we need.
He could do, I could totally see him doing the mono white Eldrazi, like the Displacer and
stuff.
That'd
be fun to see. Yeah, it would be interesting to see. I think the push and pull between what's still in the format and what's new to the format will be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's always the best thing, like seeing like what was the card, it was something I was thinking that, like, it was a shame that it just never, ever got played, and all of a sudden, like, now it's being played. It's Kithian.
Right.
Kithian's a perfect example. Like, you're like, that thing wasn't even a blip on the radar, mm-hmm. right? Like, it was, like, X dollars, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, everybody's playing and it's now, it goes from being, like, a $4 card to, like, a $10 card.
Right.
Totally.
And I just love when stuff like that happens. That's really, really great.
I'd love to see... You know what? In my heart of hearts, I would love to see somebody play, like, make these zombies good. Because there's a zombie lord. There's a 2-2.
That is the deck I don't want to draft. The zombies are so terrible in general. But actually, right, I think blue-black won, actually, though. Didn't blue-black win
I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up.
I think it won the Grand Prix.
Oh, Albuquerque?
Yeah, I think, if I remember.
Yeah.
I think I saw that. Don't quote me on that. But I remember somebody saying billion texts that blue-black won. And, of course, then it would have to be zombies, right?
I don't know how you can read around the Breakfast Club gifts, but it's really hard.
Anyways, yeah, I don't know. I'd want to see something new and exciting, and I want to see something... it'd be nice to see Control show up. I feel like we've had mono-red, and mid-rangey decks, and it'd be nice to see something like blue-red tutelage show up in a big way and just, like, house people.
I want something that makes whatever random cards I have lying around really expensive.
So I heard somebody joking that the only reason that Todd Anderson played the Thing in the Ice deck was because Star City Games had a bunch of goggles laying around, and they wanted the goggles to be worth more. So they went from being like a $4 card to like a $12 card.
Right. That makes sense.
Why not? Sure.
Fun. Put them on camera a bunch.
How awesome would that be if somebody actually fucking had the wherewithal to go, you know, like, oh, these goggles, and they're a mythic. They're only really going for $350. Like, let's see if we can bump that up to $10. Right. Todd, come on.
It's the seance guy, you know, who's like, put it at $40,000 to top 8 or something.
Yes.
So my 40,000 seances can go up from 50 cents to something.
To $2.
Right. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I wouldn't mind seeing also, like, some of the big fat Eldrazi show up again. I have a feeling that if Star Threes are, like, kind of the creature that shows up a bunch, then playing a bunch of Chandra
seems yummy.
Kozilek's Return and
Kozilek's Return doesn't do anything.
Yeah, but when you cast it again, you can do here. Yeah. You can blow it up again, or Radiant Flames or something like
what
that.
What does it do, 5 or
5,
seven?
Yeah.
Five. That'd be interesting. 7 gets you 5?
Yeah. Anyways, who knows? We'll see.
I'll be excited to watch.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, what the pros do with this draft format and tackle it.
It's going to be some strange hour too, right? Because it's Madrid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be broadcasting.
That's a pain.
It is.
Oh, for us on the West
Coast. So it's like 10 hours.
Yeah, it's going to be like really in the morning. It's all right. I don't sleep that much anymore anyway.
Sweet.
Who needs sleep when you have... I don't even know what I have anymore, to be honest.
Not sleep.
Not sleep.
That's why you can't think anymore.
Not a REM cycle. Anyways.
If you out there also can't sleep, why don't you head on over to your computer and check out our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/ Wizards of the Cast. You can send us emails to wizardsofthecast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us.
Oh, yeah?
Y'all, my Twitter handle's @nobodyrly.
Ooh, that's funny.
Is it?
Not really.
No. What's yours, Larry?
@chatfiend.
That's really funny.
That's pretty funny.
Mine is @kcolef.
That's like just your name, kind of.
That's just a truncated name. That's really boring.
Truncated. Just like this ending. For Wizards of the Cast, my name's Evan Wardell.
I'm Larry Chatfield.
And I'm Cole Ferriolo.
Thanks for listening.